Well, I have a wonderful electronic invention I want you to see. It looks something like this.
What's going on, Curiosity Builders? I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs, makers, artists, podcasters, writers, filmmakers, designers, and coders who are on a mission of bringing their ideas to life by creating new things and getting their work to work. Whether you're just starting out or have been at this creative life for some time, I hope you'll learn something new in this podcast, challenge your assumptions about what is possible, and chase big ideas so you can become who you were born to be. As a creative entrepreneur, do you have what it takes to last 40 years in pursuit of your dreams and goals? Michael E. Stern is today's guest on Getting Work to Work, and he shares the secrets of his success as a photographer and documentary filmmaker for over 40 years. From self-love to resilience, Michael graciously shares his hard-earned wisdom. Smile and dial, go out and get it, don't put yourself in harm's way, story matters, have a point of view, love yourself, and keep moving forward. Show notes and links to resources mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/338. You'll also find links to stream the show on the major podcast platforms and an opportunity to sign up for my email newsletter, The Curiosity Lab. Each week, I send out some thoughts on curiosity along with books, videos, podcasts, and other resources blowing my mind as well. Michael, welcome to Getting Work to Work. It is an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. What is one interesting bit of trivia people should know about you?
That I once landed on the top of Mount Baldy in a helicopter. Mount Baldy is a large mountain here. I think it's in the San Gabriel mountain range, and you can see it from most of the freeways in Southern California. And back in the day, I was hired by Southern California Edison to do all their aerial mapping photography out of a helicopter as they were looking to expand north into Santa Barbara County and south into the Palm Springs area. It's about a 400 mile diameter, I guess, if you think about it that way. And we were flying back from Palm Springs, and these pilots were ex-Vietnam era helicopter pilots. And these were Bell Jet Rangers, I think, which were four-seaters or whatever the two-seater version was. They had two- and four-seater versions of helicopters. And we were flying back from Palm Springs area to Rosemead, where their helipad was. And he was talking about Lon Chaney had a cabin up in the mountains of Mount Baldy as a way to get away from Hollywood back in the day. He's the man of a thousand faces. And he said, would you like to land on top? And I went, yeah. So, we landed on the top of Mount Baldy and we got out and we walked around. And this is back in 1982. So it's something you certainly couldn't do today. But it was a fun story and it was fun to do. And it was exciting. And I flew for them for about 2 years. Helicopter work, the doors off the helicopter, you got a harness on to keep you from falling out. You got 1 foot on the skid. You're leaning out, taking pictures.
Oh, wow.
And terribly exciting. And there's this one move that this one guy, Daryl, the pilot that landed on Mount Baldy, he had this thing called the crab where he would fly up. He would literally turn the helicopter at a 90 degree angle. So I'm facing straight down the earth and then corkscrew down about 200 feet and then pull out of it.
Oh,
and they wanted top down views of this facility. Mm-hmm. And the first time he did this move, he pulls up. He goes, did you get it? But no, it was so exciting. I couldn't shoot. I was just enjoying it so much. Can you do that again?
Did he do it again?
Oh, he did. Of course he did. No, Daryl was great. Daryl was a great pilot. Very, very pleasant, polite person. I really enjoyed flying with him.
Nice. So did you ever do something like that before where you were getting into aerial photography, or was it just the natural next step in your career?
At the time, I was working for a multimedia company, and it was a three-part company. They did multimedia productions with slideshows and video. There was a complete photo lab facility and then a photography studio. So I ran the photography division. And one of their accounts was the Hollywood Burbank Airport. I think it's now called the Bob Hope Airport. And I was doing a lot of aerial work for them, flying in Cessna fixed wing aircraft. And then Southern California Edison was a client of this company. and they needed a bunch of aerial work. And I was tapped to be the guy that flew around for them. And after about 2 years, they decided they were spending so much money on me as an outsider that they would hire somebody on the inside as an employee. And that's how that ended. Just got to be too expensive for them. But that was a fun time. It's the first time I worked in a company where I was in charge of a number of people, and I ran one of three divisions. And, you know, I helped supervise the photo lab work. I was the art director and director of photography and production on all the multimedia shows. Wow. And there was a lot of collaboration within the company. We did work for, used to be called, it's defunct now, but RCA. We did work for Sony. There was a very, very early software company called Ashton Tate, and we did a lot of work for them, and a lot of work for the city of Burbank, city of Pasadena. So it was fun times, but, you know, all good things come to an end.
That's right. Well, one of the things that's fascinating about you is you've been at this for 40 years. First off, congratulations on 40 years of self-employment. I mean, yeah. Most people can't make it past, what, 5 years?
Yeah. You know, it stuns me that it's been that long. They haven't all been successful. And honestly, I felt like I didn't have a choice but be self-employed. And I'll reveal something personally that I used to use it as a sales pitch, but I don't anymore. But just as a fact, I have a chronic nerve condition that required some surgeries when I was younger. And I was working for this company that I referred to earlier, and I had to have the second surgery that might have made me paraplegic. So it was a very difficult time, and I came through the surgery well. I mean, obviously I'm functioning. And after my time at that company ended, I thought, you know, I really am not going to get a job anywhere because I'm probably too much of a health liability. And I think companies would rather have four-legged nags than three-legged thoroughbreds. you know, that at least that's the narrative that I put into my head. And it was always this thing in the forefront. This is why you can't go work for a company. You won't last. You'll be a liability. They'll see you as a liability. You have to make this work for yourself. And that motivation, you know, everything is built around that core. I felt like I was fragile physically, according to what the doctors put in my head. And at the time, I had a lot of respect for the authority of the medical profession. And then, you know, sometimes they're kind of fear mongers. Yeah. And I realized I didn't have to believe what they were telling me. Now, my problem is real, and I have to manage it all the time. But self-employment allows me to have downtime where I can rest and recharge and not have to do that daily 9-to-5 grind. So I've made this affliction that I have and being self-employed blend seamlessly. And I think that is a big part of my success, is having that burning desire to be successful because I was told I wasn't going to be because of a physical thing.
Yeah. Well, and it's amazing too, because just hearing the stories where you're hanging out of an airplane or a helicopter photographing top-down views of things, you know, that is in many ways something that someone that is not physically able to would never do.
Honestly, I was hell-bent for leather. I was not going to let this thing stop me. And I was pushing myself to do things that I probably shouldn't because I was so damn mad about having this problem. And I used to play tackle football with my friends at the park where, you know, we're not wearing any kind of protection. We're just a bunch of testosterone-filled knuckleheads running at full speed into each other because that's what the girls liked or something. It's equally stupid. And I remember a friend of mine, it was a long pass play. I was running to catch the ball, and my friend was running full speed, and he was going to just clean my clock as soon as I caught the ball. And he pulled up, and he said, "You can't do this anymore. You're going to get hurt." And that's when I stopped being stupid about deliberately putting myself in harm's way, which is also, I think, another thing about being successful is you have to have self-love and not put yourself in harm's way and do the right things to have a thriving life and career. So I started taking better care of myself and not doing, like, I used to climb up on the side of buildings one-handed. I was mounted on top of a, actually, I wasn't, I had to do a thing where I was pacing a motorcycle on a deserted highway, and I put a platform on the top of my car. I put the tripod on the platform. I secured the tripod to the platform, and the motorcycle guy took off, and my brother was driving my car, and he took off to chase the motorcycle. I rolled off the top of the car and landed on the highway flat on my back. I didn't secure myself to the top. And they got about a quarter of the mile down the road, and the guy in the motorcycle looked back, realized I wasn't on the car. And, you know, we all had a good laugh, but it was like I could have really gotten hurt. So mm-hmm. I had to stop doing some of that kind of dumb stuff.
Right.
Wasn't healthy long term.
No, not at all. But at least, I mean, you have those stories of doing those things, because a lot of people don't do that anymore, nor would they ever think to do that.
Well, being a photographer, being a visual artist, having the opportunity to do something that's so ingrained in my DNA is such a joyful feeling. And to be able to express it and have these opportunities to express it, mm-hmm. it's the most exciting thing. It's the best thing next to falling in love, I think.
Mm. Wow. What a powerful view of photography.
It still is. It is what gets me going. If I'm feeling bad or feeling low, either I pop out my smartphone or I pull out my camera and take pictures. There's something energizing about seeing the analog world translated into a still visual. I spend a lot of time in my garden. It's very verdant, and there's succulents and bonsai and orchids and vegetables and fruit trees. And, you know, late in the day or early in the morning, the lighting angle is so pretty. It just fills me with such positivity that I'm so grateful that I have that.
Who was the photographer that really opened your eyes to wanting to be a photographer?
Probably George Harrell. In terms of, he was a fanatic about lighting mm-hmm. and the fact that he worked in Hollywood. So I love the visual look of what he came up with the limited technology. But the guy that really pushed me to be a professional was a very obscure photographer by the name of Victor Kepler. Mm. And there's a book written about him called Man Plus Camera. Mm. And what was inspiring about Victor is he was trying to become an advertising photographer, and he was bugging an ad agency to give him work, and they didn't want to give him work. And finally, just to shut him up, they gave him a job. Photograph this can of string beans. Now, this is back in the day when canning vegetables was very, very new to everybody. Mm-hmm. And you open up the can, and it looked like something that came out the other end. It was just very unattractive. And he had to he had to photograph it in black and white.
Oh, wow.
And make it look good on a black and white checkerboard background in a white dish. And he tells a story about how he worked, and he was not going to let them defeat him. And he mm-hmm. turned in this picture that the art director was so impressed, it jump-started his career.
Wow.
And I use that story. A similar thing, I had a 22-year relationship with the Walt Disney Company as one of their premium corporate guys. Mm-hmm. And 2 years, I knocked on their door and did smile and dial to try to get them to look at my portfolio. And they were very polite. No thanks, we got somebody. Mm-hmm. And finally, in 1982-ish, an art director said, okay, fine, shoot this thing. Come back Monday morning. So Friday afternoon, it's a black plastic video box, videotape box. They were just starting Disney Home Video. They're going to do a black and white newspaper ad. And he wanted a photograph of this black plastic box. And I spent the entire weekend making sure that this was the best photograph of a black plastic box ever. And when I came in Monday morning to show him the film, I could tell he was ready to be dismissive. And he throws the transparencies, 4x5 color transparencies in a light box. He does a double take. Oh, mm-hmm. these are pretty good, kid. And that started my career with them. And if I hadn't read Victor Kepler's book about perseverance and appreciated George Harrell's fanaticism about the light being perfect, mm-hmm. I wouldn't have had any reference to, it's a black plastic box. What the hell? Just shoot it and get out of Dodge. No, mm-hmm. put in the effort matters. Especially if you want something big in your life, you got to put in the time. There's just no other way to do it.
Well, not only putting in the time, but being willing to not shut up, you know, being that is another takeaway of that story for me. It's like, you strike me as someone that's going to be constantly knocking on the door to get what you want.
Yes. Yeah. I'm old school. I like to go out and get it. And I'm like a dog with a bone once I get an idea. And if you don't want me to bother you, then you need to tell me. But if I think you're wrong, I'm not going to listen. I knew that, Disney was an ideal client for me, and they were not really getting good work at the time for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And I wanted in. It was the Magic Kingdom. I wanted in. I will not be denied. I think I can do really well at photographing toys and kids and buildings. And I just kept at it. Eventually water will drill a hole in a rock if you give it enough time.
That's so true.
Perseverance and resiliency. If you don't have those combined with your passion and talent, you won't get anywhere. Maybe you might, but I don't think you'll get anywhere substantial. And for me, I have the passion, I have the talent, and I have the perseverance. And, bouncing back from failure, you have to have that when you're self-employed, because failure is, you fail because you have success. And you know what success is, because you've had failure to balance it against.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the deal. I mean, it's everybody's life is a mixture of success and failure. It's a question of how you handle it.
Yeah. Wow.
I know. I almost sound like an elder statesman after 40 years.
Well, in some instances you are, because, let's be honest, in the creative industry, people take on the role of elder statesman after a freaking year.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. And I everyone's an expert. Nobody knows anything.
Yes.
I like the fact that young photographers, either who I meet through my classes or online tutoring or at events, seek me out for information or guidance. And I want to help them. I really do. I don't want to lead them down the wrong way. I want to give them good foundational information, which is why I specialize in intro classes. Mm-hmm. I don't do intermediate. I don't do advanced. I do basic Lightroom, basic Photoshop, basic photography, basic lighting. Here are ways to think about these tools. At the very beginning of your knowledge, I can give them a good foundation. I really work to be that kind of person. You know what my fantasy is?
What's that?
I have some sort of retirement announcement, and there's a big dinner in my honor, and these past students get up and talk about me, and my kids are there, and they're proud of me. That would be a great ending, but it's a fantasy. No one gives a shit, Chris. And that's the reality. So you got to love yourself and keep moving forward.
There's the title of the episode right there. Love yourself and keep moving forward.
Love yourself and keep moving forward. And you have to, because if you don't, you're going to be left behind, because the world's moving forward.
Mm-hmm. So fast, faster and faster.
And it's a moving stream, and you're on the side. You're either going to jump in and swim with it, or stay on the sidelines and say bye-bye to your future. You have to participate to be successful.
Yeah.
That's another good title.
Absolutely. And it leads me to this thought of, not only do you participate, but sometimes you need to swim to the shore and rest for a minute or two so that you don't drown.
Yes, you need time to reflect and take stock. And it's also, that has been the benefit of this medical issue that I've always dealt with, is it's made me take time out and stop and reflect. And one of the ways that I've been able to manage this well is I do a lot of physical fitness, a lot of isometrics, calisthenics, stretching, weightlifting. I drink a lot of water. I get enough rest. I try to meditate and do all the things to work on the physical and internal self to make me solid and strong and impervious to the constant flinging of arrows that come at you. You can always tell who the pioneers are because they have the arrows in their backs. But, it's a hard world out there, and it's easy to get broken. And if you're strong, then you bend. And, you want to be like water and go around the obstacle. You don't want to crash into it all the time. Even though you'll eventually get through, there's a lot of damage done. Mm-hmm. Be like water and flow around things. If you have self-love and you're doing the things to take care of yourself, then everything just fits easier together. Mm-hmm. My God, I sound like a religious nut.
That's another podcast episode.
I think so. We'll see what the reaction is to this one. And what more controversial things can I say?
That's right. What I appreciate in your 40 years is not only have you accrued all of this, you know, talent, you've accrued all of this wisdom, but I'm sure you've had to see some positive things, you know, over the 40 years that you weren't anticipating or expecting.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. And one of the great things, even though technology lowers the bar for entry, mm-hmm. it's also helped me, and I know lots of other of my era, my ilk, it's allowed us to take what's in our head and get it out in a more efficient fashion. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to do filmmaking. I always wanted to be a cinematographer. Mm-hmm. But back in the day, to get into the union, to get low budget shoots, it was such an uphill struggle to deal with the limited options. Technology was much more difficult to work with back then. And when all this electronic stuff came to the fore, we could all make filmmaking. There was a lot of pressure for still guys to get into video and motion pictures. And I resisted it and I resisted it. And I finally decided, what am I waiting for? And I've gone from being a still photographer to 8 years ago, getting into filmmaking through construction time-lapse films. Mm-hmm. But I've since done one industrial film and one short form documentary. The ease at which I can now take what's in my head and put it out for the rest of the world to take in, that's really positive and that's really exciting.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing too to really consider what you can do just with an iPhone or just with a DSLR now. I mean, it blows my mind.
But it doesn't mean that you can't think about it first. You got to be smart. You got to have a reason. You got to have a point of view. Every single thing, whether it's a still image or a motion picture, story matters. There's mm-hmm. got to be a narrative. There's got to be a reason that this is beginning. What is the middle? What is the end? And ideas still matter. All the technology in the world is going to be for naught if you don't hang it on a good story mm-hmm. and understand what you're trying to communicate. And that's what we do. We're communicators.
How have you learned to define and refine your point of view over time? I get the impression that you have a really strong point of view when it comes to things.
Really?
What?
I thought I was being soft about that. You know, I was kind of milk toast from 1979 to 1990. I was just sort of muddling along, trying to make a living and trying to make it big with the ladies. And I was not doing either one of those particularly well. And then the woman that I'm currently married to, in 1991, I was doing a toy catalog shoot for an affiliate of Disney. And she recognized something in the film. We were looking at dailies after one particularly long day. She goes, "I can see your style." And I went, "Me? Style? What are you talking about?" "Well, the way you like dark edges, you like pools of light, you like rich, saturated, juicy colors, you like strong emotion." And to have an outside person articulate that, it was right in front of me and I never even noticed it. And that was a really good thing for her to say. And it got me to really focus on my point of view. And technically, I think that's the strength of my work. You know, the edges are dark. I like vignettes. I like pools of light. I like to see into the shadows. I like rich color. So I have a visual that I'm very good at creating regardless of the circumstance. And then, you know, the story, what is the information in the picture? Guillermo del Toro is another person that inspires me. Mm-hmm. He is of the philosophy, fill your frame with details.
Yes.
So Victor Kepler, never give up. George Harrell, be fanatical about your light. And Guillermo del Toro, fill your frame with details. I'm not actively seeing their names in my head when I'm shooting. At this point, it's really feel. And the clients I shoot for, I know what they're looking for me to deliver. And so that really guides me. But these guys are still in my head. I got to get the shot. I wish the light was better. And, you know, what's in the frame that makes sense for their goals? I work almost exclusively under available light. So that is really a challenge. but it's also when you nail it, when you get the right point of view with the right light, it's like you've got a tableau that is not any better than if you did it by scratch and planted everything in the frame to be just perfect. Mm-hmm. You've got that perfect shot because you showed up at the right time, you got the right details, and the light's working.
There's also a sense of patience, too, that sometimes is lacking in today's world of if we can just plan and get everything lit perfectly with all this stuff, we can get it done, and move on to the next thing. Whereas, you know, you read about Ansel Adams or Galen Rowell where, you know, they're out in the field at the right time. Oh, look. There's a rainbow coming out of the Potala Palace. If I run 2 miles that way, I can actually align the two and make an amazing picture. And you read stuff like that, and you're just it's mind-blowing how that patience and perseverance is such a critical part of image making.
And paying attention. Part of the joy of what I do is the participation in the process that I get to be. And for instance, yesterday I was shooting for a regular account documenting the construction of a large transportation project for LA Metro. Mm-hmm. And I was down in a tunnel about 80 to 100 feet underground. And there were these two fellas that were putting in these blocks of yellow concrete with little dots on it. It's where people stand right before they get onto the subway. Mm-hmm. And I was up on the platform where the people would stand, and these guys were doing their thing. And it was okay. It was really just a documentation of what they're doing. And I realized if I got down to where the tracks are and shot back up at them, that would make them look heroic. And we could see this process a little bit more in a more unusual point of view. And son of a gun, they started to move and do something. I thought, I got to get down onto the tracks. And I had to run about 50 feet south of them, go down a flight of stairs and run back over on the tracks. And there's all kinds of huzzerai and junk and stuff on the ground there. And I could easily have tripped and fallen. So I'm looking down, looking up, and trying to hopefully I get there before these guys finish their thing. And I got there. Because I know my gear so well, I'm not thinking technically, the camera's already set. I just am pointing and shooting and watching what they're doing and just shooting as they're doing their motion of putting the mortar on this big block and then picking it up, the two of them, because it's so heavy, and placing it down, then tamping it down. It was the same exact thing they were doing when I was up above, but mm-hmm. that angle didn't really give you a sense of what they were doing and how awesome it is what they're doing. They didn't know what I was running away from. They weren't stopping their working. I just had to be really, really quick and get there. And when I came back up and I showed them the work, and they went, "Oh man, I know what I'm doing. That looks awesome, dude. Thanks." And it brought some joy to them. I got a really good picture. I didn't hurt myself in the process because I'm not that fleet of foot at my advanced age. As you keep reminding people, 40 years, and the client was happy with the work. And, you know, they appreciate the fact that I'm tuned into my environment and I see what's happening around me and I react. You can't think, you have to sense and react. And the kind of work I do really thrives on that. And speed is important, but process, I think, is more important than speed. Because without good process, you'll miss things, regardless of how fast or slow they happen.
One process is something that you discover over time. Mm-hmm. Yes, you have kind of an initial process when you start out. You have to. But it's only refined through the fire of working that you then, you know, build upon it over time. You know, remove, add, test, you know, burn that one, forget that one, throw that away. And it sounds like, you know, that's a positive thing in 40 years is you have an unbelievable process that is probably enviable of most people.
Well, I know what I'm going for. Clients know what they're hiring me for. And so that map is easy to follow. I tell my beginning photography students when they've gotten some success on an assignment, you know, this is not exactly what we're looking for, but you're going in the right direction and only 10,000 more bad pictures and you're going to be there. I know it. And, you know, that process of work, you know, there's a lot of bad stuff that I do that doesn't see the light of day. Mm-hmm. But there's less of that and more of the good stuff. And in the beginning, you have more bad pictures than good pictures. And for me, especially when editing a film, editing is a process of removal. Mm-hmm. How little can I include and still make my point? Mm-hmm. Still tell my story. You know, I shot 900 pictures yesterday.
Wow.
And I have to deliver 100.
Wow. Yeah.
So there are 800 pictures in there that ain't going to make the cut, and probably 300 are stinkers that would never see the light of day, and others are sort of marginal. Mm-hmm. But I got to make good choices, and I have a lot of pictures to choose from. You know, I tell students, rather than try to find the pictures you like, eliminate the ones you don't like, because the bad ones are easy to see, and eventually the good ones will be there. The cream always rises to the top. I like to tell students, part of why how I decide if a picture is going to go on my website, if this was the only picture that I could show you, that this is the work I do, mm-hmm. if I can show that work to you and not wince, then it goes in. But if I wince, it doesn't go in. Mm. You have to be really militant about what you accept to be good work for yourself. Mm. And it means your published work is smaller than you might think it should be, but that's arbitrary. Mm-hmm. Put out good work, always be learning, always be hustling, go for it. We have a limited amount of time. So what are you waiting for? Mm-hmm. You know, have high standards for yourself. Don't, you know, the only competition I have is myself.
Yeah.
How can I do better next time?
Oof, what a powerful driving question, though. I mean, do you ask that question of yourself every day, every moment?
I review that after every job. I can remember almost every moment of every job.
Wow.
And I'm looking at the pictures this morning from yesterday's shoot, and I'm remembering the conversation I had with the client. What was I thinking when I shot this? Why is this picture better than the other? How can I do this better next time? I do a lot of spontaneous portrait work, mm-hmm. and I'm always, how can I do that better? How can I engage mm-hmm. the subject more? What camera setting should I think about next time under this lighting condition to get a better result, or a result that is more appealing to me? And if it appeals to me, it might appeal to other people. Mm-hmm. Always reviewing. I go through old footage. Oh God, why did I put the camera there? What was I thinking with that kind of depth? That would, you know, I'm very, very hard on myself, because if I'm not, the marketplace will be even crueler.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a life to live and a family to support, and good, honest work helps create that support.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm almost good now. After 40 years, I'm almost good.
Well, they say you never arrive, right? So, you know, just keep pushing.
Well, I think you have to keep pushing. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I do think that sometimes I have arrived. I just don't stay around long enough. You know, one of the eye-opening things that really, really threw me for a loop is 1996, I think it was. I hit my all-time high in terms of sales. I had almost mm-hmm. 300,000 in sales mm-hmm. for 1 year. This is 1996 dollars. Mm-hmm. And I was so focused on being successful that when I got successful, I didn't think about how to maintain that success. Mm. And that's a different skill set. And I'm not a business person. I'm an artist who's been lucky enough and working hard enough to make a living at it and somehow developed a business model that has been sustainable.
Yeah.
But when I got to that peak, it was downhill from there. It was like a slow ride that picked up speed on a roller coaster. I just couldn't stop. Sales mm-hmm. started sliding. I just didn't understand until too late that getting successful is one thing and staying successful is another. And I almost crashed and burned completely before I learned how to sustain success. That was shocking to me. I thought, well, I'm not going to fail now because I've become successful.
What was the catalyst between achieving success and recognizing what it took to maintain success?
You know, I knew as soon as I said that you're going to ask me that. That is something I don't think I can articulate right now. I'd have to think about that. I knew that I had to just get back out there and work again. This was right around the technology tsunami that hit. All the digital cameras started coming out then. So there was a great disruption in the force, mm-hmm. and a lot of people really got chewed up by it. Back then, digital cameras were like $8,000 or $9,000 for a body. medium format camera systems were $60,000, just ridiculous money. And this stuff was going to be old and outdated before you knew it.
Yep.
And I had that kind of money, but I wasn't going to devote that kind of money to it. So I learned all I could about pixel counts, histograms, color management, printing, Photoshop, and started teaching an open forum type of class at a very big camera store here in LA. And the owner of the company gave me all the camera gear I wanted in exchange for my time.
Brilliant.
So I got tens of thousands of dollars worth of equipment for nothing more than my time every couple of Saturdays. So that allowed me to get a head start on the other photographers in the market and start working with digital cameras. And then I learned that if you have knowledge, you can leverage that through manufacturers to give you stuff. Mm-hmm. Becoming an expert means people will listen to you. And I just started becoming more of a force in the field, learning as much as I could and experimentation and trying to find areas where I could put this new knowledge to work. So it forced me to make more phone calls, go to more outreach events, get out there and see people. That, I guess, is what I got from it.
Which is amazing because it really, that's your perseverance showing up right there.
Well, yes. I mean, listen, Chris, nobody loves you like your mother, and sometimes not even her, right? So you have to do it for yourself. You know, if you have the talent and the drive and the resiliency and the self-love and the appreciation for what it means to exist, what other choice do you have? Mm-hmm. You're just going to sit around and watch TV? You just have to understand, I want a life where I'm thriving, not surviving. Surviving is great up until about the age of 30. And then you can't have cinder block legs and 1x2x6s for your coffee table. You know, when we bought our first grown-up piece of furniture, it's a Stickley furniture, which is sort of goes with the Craftsman era house we live in. It's a dining room table in the Stickley style that seats 12. That's a big table. And when we bought it, I was like, this is our first grown-up piece of furniture. It's so exciting. You need to put markers in your life that give you a gauge of how successful you are. Mm-hmm. And I know that's a materialistic item that I identify, but there also are internal ones like I sleep better now. Mm-hmm. I like myself more. I can listen to other people easier. I like to volunteer and help out others. You know, give yourself goals and work towards those goals. And how quickly you get there is arbitrary. You'll get there when you get there.
Yeah.
If you do everything right, the money will come in. You can't stop the money from showing up. Mm-hmm. It may not come in as fast as you want. It may not come in when you want, but the money will show up. And if you keep doing the right things, it's sustainable.
Yeah.
It's a little Miss Goody Two Shoes, but I believe if you do everything right, I think it's harder to do that now. Because there's so much pressure. There's so many more competitors. Mm-hmm. There's so much more negativity out there.
Yes.
You know, most of my clients work for large corporate entities. And these people, as nice as they are, they're stressed. They're overworked, probably underpaid. You know, who knows what kind of a job this is for them, a stepping stone or a dead end. There's a lot of people that are frustrated. And you try to work with them. And I try to be very, very positive and fun to work with. It's hard sometimes in the face of all that struggle on the other side of the equation. Man, I am just rambling here.
No, you're doing fine.
I have a little BS meter right by my microphone here, and it's just flashing red. Oh, yeah. I think I blew the bulb out.
Well, I was totally tracking with you too, because, you know, as things get negative, as competition increases, how do we then do the right thing? How do we then become more creative? How do we make sure our comfort zones aren't the death knell of our creativity?
This is something that I think about a lot, and I tell all of my students and commission salespeople, I tell this a lot too as well. You've got to put money away. You've got to live on less. You've got to live beneath your means and build up a war chest, because it's not if the dry times show up, it's when they show up and how often they show up, how long they last, and can you weather the storm? And one of the things that brings me great comfort is I have a, you know, pretty decent war chest, but I've been saving and investing money for, you know, almost 30 some years. I didn't really have enough the first 10 or so, but you know, my family thinks I'm cheap. I consider myself to be frugal. And, you know, if I'm having a bad month, then, you know, the fun stuff just isn't in the budget this month. Again, I was shooting yesterday with my client. We had coffee and, you know, $8 for a Starbucks. Okay. You don't need to buy that. Live beneath your means, build up as much of self-reliance as you can. So when you have these slow times or when you're in a creative lull, the pressure of having to get working and how to get bills paid, got to get money, you know, you don't want that beating in you all the time because it can just grind you down into nothing. But if you have given yourself some space and some freedom because you've built up your resources, you know, debt's not a bad thing, but unmanageable debt is not a good thing. Understand, learn, educate yourself about money. One of the things I asked my son, who's just finishing up his first month at college, what's the one big takeaway you could take from, you know, my influence on you? And he said, you know, the importance of finance and managing money. And I'm going inside, I'm going, yes, yes, I got through to him. I'm sorry, money makes the world go round. And having it is not a bad thing. And you need it. I've been poor and I'm okay now. And being okay is better than not being okay. And I've been fortunate and lucky. I work hard. I've been broke. I've had money. It goes up and down, but there is some stability now. That is very comforting, especially as you get near the end of your career. I'm looking forward to a life of comfort. I mean, the life of comfort is now, but it's going to continue. I'm not going to be destitute because as a creative, I haven't planned. You know, I have a plan. I'm militant about saving money. You know, the first 10 years of our marriage, boy, 10-year-old shoes, bologna sandwiches, tuna fish, old cars. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of fun, but the payoff is down the road. And so, you know, you have to have that long-term goal always going in the background while you're dealing with the here and now. And that's a hard thing to do. That takes a lot of discipline.
Well, and I think, too, what strikes me about you, Michael, is that you are an excellent communicator, which is a strength when it comes to communicating why you're not partaking in all of these things that take you away from your goals.
I'm not easily distracted by that stuff. You know, the thing is, companies want you to buy their stuff. That's how they survive. And they're so great at marketing, making you think you need it. You feel bad, buy this, you're going to feel better. Not necessarily. You know, don't be impressed by this marketing stuff. They're not your best friend. They're trying to sell you stuff. You know, that's kind of the message I try to get through to my son. Be discerning. Know what you need versus what you want. And if you need it, figure out the most efficient way to get it. And is it worth the effort? And if you want it, then that goes in another category. And when you have the extra resources available to devote to that want, go for it. But don't just throw it on a credit card because you want it now. And next thing you know, you got $17,000 in credit card debt. That's dumb. So you got to be smart. And this is what goes back to that self-love thing. If you don't love yourself and put yourself on the right path and keep yourself out of harm's way, how can you possibly be attractive to anybody else, either professionally or personally?
Wow.
And now I'm going to get a tissue and wipe my eyes because that tear was so big. But by the way, the bullshit meter went way down to green now. So
because you stopped or because you were speaking the truth?
Wow. That was cold, man. Now, speaking the truth, of course. Of course. You know, maybe I could have been a revival preacher in another time and moment.
Or a snake oil salesman.
Oh, man, you are just killing me here. Okay. I suppose sometimes it's true. Well, you know something, when you're a portraitist, you are selling snake oil. That's for sure.
Can you make me look 10 years younger? Absolutely. No.
If you have beauty, I can take it. If you have none, I can fake it. I do a lot of documentation of construction sites as well as time-lapse filmmaking. And when I'm down in the tunnels or even up above ground. Construction workers are my heroes. I think it's fascinating what they do. They risk their lives. It's dangerous work. It beats the hell out of their bodies. They get paid well, but they really pay the price. And I love the uniforms they wear, the hard hats, the gloves, the boots, the knee pads, the eye protection, the fall protection harness, the yellow vest. You know, it's just awesome. And I'm always wanting to do portraits of these guys and these gals. And they've never really been photographed in their gear by a professional. These are photo sessions that if they last a minute, that's a long session. Mm-hmm. It's all about energy and getting them focused on me and just, you know, whatever gibberish comes out of my mouth, I get them to laugh and relax and be themselves. And you can see a lot of the portraits on my website. And it's getting me some recognition in the industry. And, you know, how do you get good pictures of these people? Well, it's all energy. It's just focused energy. It's very short term. And I kind of got on this jacket. You're talking about sort of snake oil salesman, but I'm just being silly and funny in the moment. And then it's over.
Yeah.
And it's not really snake oil, but there I go again, rambling.
Well, and I'm not saying that it was snake oil. I was just making a joke. So,
oh no, I know that. And I have no sense of humor. So that's why I took a great offense at it.
That's one thing that I really appreciate about you is that you have a great sense of humor.
Yeah. You know, if you can't laugh at yourself, you might as well start because everybody else is.
Mm-hmm.
So I really try to be entertaining. I try to be fun. I try to see the humor in myself. I'm the first one to laugh at myself. There's no question about it. But I can also be very, very serious as well. And, you know, I like the emotional roller coaster that self-employment takes you on is really good. I like it.
Yeah.
I like the ups and the downs. I like the sidebars. You know, I can't do something right now. I got to learn this. So I'm sort of idling. And then the thrill of finishing a project and the lull of being stuck in it. And you can't think your life can get any worse because you have no way out of this creative funk. And how am I going to finish this project? All that mixing in between. And do I have enough money? Am I getting enough on this job? Did I say the right thing in the proposal? All the self-doubt that creeps in. We're constantly looking for validation. And that's hard to come by. The world doesn't care a whit about you. Nobody really cares a whit about you. You've got to do it for yourself. Success, if you're measuring it strictly by money, then is dependent on somebody else. But success is measured by how healthy you are inside and out, the depth and quality of your social relationships, the depth and quality of your personal relationships. If you measure by that, you know, you're in complete control of it. And no outside force is going to tell you otherwise.
Yeah.
I like being bombarded by all that emotion because I can internalize that and spit it out into a format that you can access and see what's going on in my head.
And it helps you to connect to people of all shapes and sizes.
Yes. And what's odd, really, believe it or not, is I consider myself more of an introvert than an extrovert. And I was concerned that I would be able to speak with you today because I spent 10 hours on a job site yesterday shooting and it kind of wore me out. I do like being around people, but I certainly enjoy my alone time as well. You know, I'm just as happy to keep my own company. It gets a little boring, but you know, it's a great thing to be self-employed.
Yes.
I have to say.
So do you anticipate 50 years or do you think you'll retire before you hit 50?
Bite your tongue. 50 years. Are you kidding me? Wow. No, my goal was to hang up my shingle at the age of 64, which will be next year.
Okay.
And when I told that to my investment counselor, he spit his coffee out. No, dude, you're going to be working till you're 70. I can't see that. I got a couple of wild horses I'm trying to rein in right now that could be really good for my career, and they haven't popped yet, so I'm not sure. You know, realistically, probably 5 more years. I specialize. I'm not a generalist anymore. I haven't been a generalist for over 10 years, and I'm constantly moving. So I got into time-lapse filmmaking in 2011. Through May of this year, I've done 47 productions.
Wow.
And they've been great. Loved every moment of it. I've been doing a lot of documentation the last 2 years. More than anything else, it's been documentation. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoy that. And I'm now moving into the what I consider to be the last phase of my career, which is to focus more on portraiture. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to be a portrait artist. Mm-hmm. I never could handle it intellectually. When people didn't like my portraits, they were rejecting mm-hmm. a part of me because I put so much of me into it. I'm a lot stronger emotionally and intellectually now. And if you don't like the picture, I'm sorry, but this is a good picture, especially since I did it. No ego there. No ego there. But I have a guest house on my property that I'm converting into a studio. And I have a portrait technique that I've been working on the last 6 or 7 years that I've almost perfected. And it's a very equipment light approach, but looks like multiple lighting. And it's mm-hmm. a very cool thing. And I'm hoping that if I can get that going and marketed correctly or properly or effectively, whatever the word is, that I could see myself traveling around doing portraits of important people. But I also have some clients that want me to travel around the country documenting their large-scale construction projects. And that's also something that I'd like to do. I didn't travel at all because I wanted to be home for my son. Mm-hmm. And I want to always be around when he came home, got up, I'd be home. When he went to bed, I'd be home. When he'd come home after school, I'd be home. I always wanted to be around to catch those moments that kids tell you only when you're around, not if you're off working somewhere like my dad did. Mm-hmm. But now that he's off to college, that's all changed for me. So I'm very, very open to traveling. And if I can do the traveling work and the portrait work, I could easily see 5-6 years, but much longer than that, boy, that'd be tough. I want to go sit in a beach and drink pina coladas.
My dad is in his late 60s and he just got back from Central Asia. So he did some traveling for work and he's retired from both of his careers. And so he's just kind of doing his own thing now. And there's hope there in travel.
There's hope there in travel. And I'm also, you know, the only real hobby I have is bowling. I'm a competitive bowler.
Oh, cool.
And I really enjoyed it. I've been doing it a long time. I'm not so good, you know, 180 average. You know, it's not great, but it's certainly, we have a good time. It's very social. And I could see myself spending more time bowling. I know it sounds a little fuddy-duddy. If you haven't bowled, though, it's a really hard game to master. Mm-hmm. It looks very easy. The ball goes a fixed length. It comes back automatically. The weather's always perfect, but it's a hard game to master. So
yes, it is. I was in a bowling league when I was a kid.
It's the number one participation sport in the country. Tennis is number two.
I did not know that.
Well, and now the world knows that.
Absolutely. Well, Michael, this has been a fun, fantastic conversation. I've enjoyed every minute of it. And the last question that I have for you is, what was the last book or podcast that blew your mind?
I read a lot of stuff online and try to get a balanced view of what's happening in today's world and how mm-hmm. I fit in it or don't fit in it. I don't really have any favorites. I have dyslexia. Mm. Reading is really a struggle, which is partly why I'm such a strong visual artist. Mm-hmm. The last book I read was the biography of Johnny Cash.
Oh, cool.
Which I found fascinating. He was quite a character and incredibly talented and self-destructive in equal mm-hmm. measure. Yes. You know, he could have had a lot longer life had he not done all the things he did. I'm fascinated by that book. And I'm just getting into Joe Rogan's podcast. Mm-hmm. He's a stand-up comedian, but also has the podcast, something like over 1,000 interviews he's had on it. Mm-hmm. And he's a pretty smart guy.
Yeah. The last one a friend sent me was with Rob Zombie.
Rob Zombie. I've heard the name, but I can't place it.
He was a rock star, kind of the band White Zombie back in the day. Mm-hmm. And then he would go on to create horror films such as the Halloween remakes and some other stuff. Yeah. So he wanted to be a filmmaker, I believe, growing up, but it wasn't really attainable back in the day for mm-hmm. him. And so he's like, so he got into music and now he got into film. So,
you know, with enough effort, anything's attainable. I don't see any barriers to anything. I mean, I'm not going to be a rocket scientist. You know, you have to know what kind of an animal you are. Mm-hmm. But once you define that for yourself, then what you want to do is going to reveal itself. Knowing yourself inside and out is really important to go forward and have a thriving life.
And you have provided the model this whole episode, which is awesome.
Well, you're too kind, Chris, but I appreciate the sentiment, and I'm hoping that this is helpful. It's been fun for me for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot that I'm taking away from this conversation because, you know, I'm going into year 14 of my self-employment journey mm-hmm. with lots of ups and downs, tangents and failures and successes. And just this conversation with you has been really impactful to give me hope to keep going down the path that I'm on because, you know, it's only fuel to keep you stronger.
Yes, you're welcome. And I'm filled with hope every day. I'm filled with joy every day. Mm. I relish what opportunities are going to come to me this week or what opportunities am I going to create.
Mm.
It's still exciting for me after all this time.
Yeah.
I can't think of doing anything else.
That's amazing. Just thank you, Michael, just for everything that you've shared and just, welcome, I don't know, just being awesome. I think you're a really awesome human being.
Being awesome. I don't think that's ever been said with my name in the same sentence, but I appreciate that.
I hope this interview with Michael was as impactful for you as it was for me. I learned so much just from this hour-long conversation with Michael, and it's just awesome to hear from someone who's a little bit further down the road than I am, encouraging me to keep going and to keep pushing toward the things that I want to do. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.